Welcome to Focus on the Community on Memories 107.9 WAMW and worldwide live from WAMWAMFM.com. I'm Grant Schwarzentruber. Each week we focus on a topic important to our community. Focus on the Community is sponsored by First Federal Savings Bank in Washington and Ligoti. We've got a good show this week, and I'm pleased to welcome our guest. It's Mr. Greg Jones from SIDC. How are you today?
Thanks for having me here. Yeah, I love it.
Great. Tell me, first off, a little bit about your background and what SIDC is.
Sure. Well, I grew up in the area. I grew up in Linton, Indiana, moved to Washington about 10 years ago, but I've been working with Southern Indiana Development Commission for about 18 years now.
And you're happy to be here, right?
Love it. Yeah. Love Southern Indiana and love to see all the changes that have happened over the past 18 years and some that have been as a result of my organization. So that's been wonderful to see. What SIDC does is we really focus on helping communities out with local issues that they may be having. A lot of times that means water, sewer, those utility type projects that they are struggling to take care of in their area, especially with aging infrastructure that they have. So that's really our bread and butter. We help out those communities because a lot of them are elected officials and don't necessarily have the expertise to be able to perform those projects on their own or know how what they need to do in order to get everything lined up in order to make a project move forward. But we are considered a regional planning commission, and that gives us a little special liberty where we try and bring the region together around different issues. So we have programs that range on housing and trying to help people stay in their homes, help with ADA accessibility. We have programs around brownfields and trying to remediate different brownfields in the area and clean those properties up so they can be reused. We have programs on, like I said, infrastructure.
Blight even, right?
Blight, that
relates
absolutely.
To housing.
Downtown redevelopment, facilities. You know, if you've seen a lot of the projects that SIDC has kind of been a behind-the-scenes organization on. One right now that's going on is the new fire station that's being built up at the north side of Washington, Township.
Northeast there, Washington yep. Township, and it's not too far from where I live. So.
Nope. But we've had our hand in economic development as well, specifically in Davies County. You know, we helped with the rail spur that happened out at GPC to help bring GPC to the area. And then just a multitude of different economic development activities. The one that I'm probably most proudest of was bringing three counties together to form the Westgate at Crane and get three counties all working together cohesively to create economic development around Crane. And that's been really cool. It's really challenging trying to do rural regional efforts, but I find it more rewarding when we can actually bring everybody together and everyone benefits.
That's wonderful. So SIDC, again, tell me what that stands for.
Southern Indiana Development Commission.
Okay. And what is your area? I know it's multiple counties, but which counties are we talking about?
Starting on the west side, we got Knox County, Davies County, Greene County to the north, Martin County, and Lawrence County.
Okay. So you go all the way over to Bedford.
Yep. Vincennes to Bedford and Greene County on top. And we are tied in with 14 other state regional planning commissions that cover, it's around 72 counties in the state of Indiana.
Okay, so there's about 20, 25 that aren't involved with one of these?
Right. They're typically around the Indianapolis area where economic development happens on a more individualized county-by-county basis. You know, in the rural areas, you have to do a lot of regional approaches, and so you see regional planning commissions really thrive in those areas.
Wonderful. Well, this is interesting stuff, and something that you mentioned was that SIDC a lot of time works on utilities and infrastructure.
Right.
And something that we're going to talk a little bit about today, I hope, Greg, is this study that recently came out that you guys were involved in, and it talks about the state of broadband and broadband in rural areas. And one of the quotes that really stuck out to me, and I'm gonna let you talk about it, but the thing that really jumped out to me was that they said broadband infrastructure, without a doubt, is the equivalent of a railroad line or a four-lane interstate highway in this century. And, I mean, that's a pretty big deal. And look, we want to be on the front lines of this, not getting passed by other areas. So tell me about this study, and sure. Maybe let's start in this study in particular, but what is broadband? What are we talking about?
Okay, so there's different definitions of broadband, but typically you're talking about the speed in which you can access the internet or download things from the internet. So the FCC sets a standard of 25 megabytes per second upload and 3 megabytes per second download as a standard speed for their definition of broadband.
And we'd call that 25 up, 3 down. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
But a lot of our federal programs have a speed requirement or for eligibility in receiving funding from the federal or state government at 10 upload, 1 download.
So that's slower, right?
That's slower. And so it makes it hard to go out and get funding, especially whenever you're looking at the way that providers can report how they, what their speeds are and what their territory is. Basically, they can use what they market. And sometimes, you know, if you go out into a rural area, you may show that you're covered by a provider. You call them up and say, hey, I want internet out here. And they will tell you, well, we haven't gone out that far yet. And so, you know, it makes it really difficult whenever you're trying to, you know, really understand how much of a problem the rural areas are having with getting broadband out to their areas.
It's interesting. So maybe tell, you know, for the listeners here, I'm mm-hmm. talking with Greg Jones. He is in charge at SIDC, mm-hmm. and they do economic development projects, and they assist local organizations in their 5-county region, of which Davies is one of those places. So we're talking about rural broadband, the internet, in getting it to people who don't maybe currently have it. And so, Greg, like, why is this a big deal? Why is this an economic development issue?
Well, without access to the internet, you cannot be part of the global economy. And that's where things are headed. And so we're really looking at this as a way to maintain competitiveness for our region. Because what the study was showing was that, you know, there's not really a broadband issue if you live inside a town or a city. But if you get out, you know, just even a little bit outside of the city boundaries, then you really struggle with getting access to broadband. We saw where there was, the study highlighted where there was almost half of our businesses that are in the rural area don't have access to 25.3 definition of broadband.
Okay, so almost half the businesses don't have 25.3?
Right.
Which is a reasonably, I mean, if you have 25.3, you should be okay, right?
That's right, yeah.
I mean, most businesses, some places need something faster, but...
Yeah, medical institutions need a higher level, and even you're starting to get into some of the ag industry is really getting quite technical, where you need to have, you know, for their drone systems and driving and GPS and everything that's going on with the ag industry, you've got to be able to have broadband availability, especially, you know, if you look at on demand. So if you have an order come in and you need to be shipping later on that day with that order, if you don't go into town and check your email to get that, then you may have missed an order.
I was told by a local lady, I told her we were going to be talking about this, and I told her a little bit about the study, and she's like, oh yeah, my neighbor, she's an online teacher, mm-hmm. and she has to go, she lives south of town where I guess yep. they have spotty, mm-hmm. spotty internet. She says she has to go into town, into the library, just to do her job.
Right.
Because normally it would be a from home occupation as an online teacher or professor, and she has to go into town just to do her work, which is, you know, that shouldn't be.
Well, and, you know, we're an area where we've talked about there being a workforce development issue in our area, where our industries don't have the trained personnel in order to do the jobs that are available in this region. And broadband can help provide those workers if people are able to go online and take that training. But you have to live in a city and you have to live in a town in order to be able to do that.
And one thing I was going to mention that I just thought of, Greg, was that in Daviess County, I think we probably have more rural businesses than a lot of other counties because of our high contingency of Amish population, Mennonite population. They're very entrepreneurial. They tend to have home-based businesses where they'll put something near where they live, and they go into business.
That's right. Yeah, and they're really hurting on by not having the broadband in their area. Now, there are some times where they're able to get access through their phones, but where I find it really troubling is, you're really only going to be providing services locally, because you're not going to be able to market yourself globally. And on top of that, you've got, in the area, we have 9,000 households in our area that have kids in them that don't have access to broadband at 25.3.
I thought the number was higher than that. It was like a third of, wasn't it a third of the households? It was like 10, 11,000 people.
Yeah, it was, it was 45% of the households with children don't have that access. And so, that can put a strain on a lot of your resources, because maybe schools have to stay open later to allow kids to access the internet there. Maybe libraries have to stay open longer to allow access there. Parents are waiting around for the kids to finish assignments. But you also, you just can't do homework at home.
Right. Yeah, it talks about here the homework gap.
Right.
I'm referring to the study, and we'll put this put the study up on on our webpage.
Great.
Not that many people will be able to access it. Maybe a third of them can't, but right? But
and come into town.
Come into town and check it out. But we will put this study up. This is kind of what's prompted this discussion. But essentially what I'm gathering from the study is that there's a lot of people, a lot more than you would think, that don't have access.
Right. I didn't realize the problem was as bad as it is. Uh-huh. Most people find broadband to be an issue that private corporations should take care of. But a lot of communities have asked, and been denied, for the extension of their broadband networks. They have their own economic models for how they make money, and they provide it whenever the density, and enough people are willing to pay what they're willing to pay, to come to their area.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And yeah, it totally makes sense. And so what it's really showcasing to us is we've got a big issue. Mm-hmm. And who are the parties that can come together around this issue in order to try and solve it? And it will be those those private providers, that will have to come to the table. But I think we're going to have to bring in the public, the county commissioners, county council, will have to come in on this issue. The local economic development organizations will have to come in. The rural electrics will have to come in, because they can give access to expanding broadband on their current utilities that they have. So we're going to have to bring all those different partners together to try and take on this issue, and it's probably going to cost some money from the locals to be able to,
I believe,
get this
that
to expand.
Very few things are free anymore.
That's right.
And there's some other counties. You've heard about some places down in Dubois County that mm-hmm. have called themselves, they've done some of these local municipality projects. I'm thinking Huntingburg, maybe Jasper, have called themselves like high speed cities or giga city or something like that, because they've done some projects. What have they done, and is that something that we could do here locally?
Well, I think when they look at it, they look at how do we provide fiber broadband, and they're really talking about...
And when you talk about fiber, mm-hmm. that's fiber optics, right?
That's fiber
and
optics,
that would be the
yeah.
fastest of the
that's
options,
right.
Generally.
Because it's a dedicated line, and it's the fastest. You get the fastest upload, fastest download, but there's multiple different ways to deliver broadband.
Correct.
Access.
You can do coax cable. You can do it through the phone lines. You can do it a variety of ways, right?
That's right. And so they're really looking at the cities, which isn't the area that has the problem in our area.
Right.
We need the rural area to be fixed. And so that's, we're going to have to take a little bit of a different model than what they're doing in those areas in order to try and expand broadband to the rural areas.
So we talked a little bit about some of the negative impacts that we've heard mm-hmm. about. There's this homework gap that I mentioned. And I mean, are we seeing, you know, the internet is not something that, I mean, they say that it's the same as a road or maybe any other infrastructure, but you know, to be honest, if you need the internet, you can go and you can get on it somewhere. So how big of an issue is this, you know, gap, this homework gap? I mean, it talks about it being an issue, but tell me about that.
Yeah. What, you know, the thing I take away, and I've talked a lot of to the superintendents in the area.
Okay.
And they just, you know, we're moving to where our snow days can now be done online. But how do you do that if you have students in the rural area? You have homework that's all on the computer and done online. But how do you do that if you don't have broadband? So it becomes a learning problem. And then for the businesses, you've got, if you want to grow your business, you've got to be global. And it hinders those businesses from becoming global. I think there was around, we mentioned it before, where there was half of the business had no access uh-huh. to 25.3.
And most of the businesses that I know of that I deal with, they're not in Washington Township.
Right. What the study doesn't even get into, and what I would like to do a follow up on, is what's the affordability? Mm-hmm. Because you know, it's not free, and in the rural areas, we've heard that the prices can be 2 to 3 times what they are inside city or town limits.
So let's talk a little bit about price. Mm-hmm. I saw a number in here, $1,800-$1,900 per year that people would be willing to pay to have 25.3. So that amounts to, I don't know, $1,500 a month or so, or not $1,500, $150 a month, right?
Right.
That people would be willing to pay to have that higher speed internet. Mm-hmm. And then the study computes it at over $200 million in positive economic impact were they to have that. And so you have to assume there's a drag in a similar sense with them not having that. Does that make sense? I mean, is it that big of an issue?
I think the number that they gave was $218 million that yes. we're missing out on over the next 15 years. And I honestly think it's a conservative estimate. You know, when you look at some of these projects with their agriculture industry being on demand, and you think about the number of orders that you might miss by not having broadband, or getting your product out on time to where you may not have to throw away product when you have a perishable item. On top of that, you know, you look at, we're missing out on our housing market because there's a lot of homes in the rural area. And I, you know, my conversation with realtors is they tell me that, you know, it's really hard to sell a home that doesn't have broadband access. And some of these
especially
homes are really
coming,
nice.
Yeah, especially if they're coming from somewhere where they had it.
Absolutely. Most, you know, if you're getting a new doctor in town that's out of med school, they have been in a city. They've had access to broadband, and now they're going to come into a rural area, buy a home. And then we've seen it where there's been turnover, where they've moved out after 6 months.
And that's interesting. You don't think about the far-reaching effects that it has mm-hmm. if we haven't dealt with this issue. So maybe let's talk a little bit about some of the solutions. We've talked about different things. You know, this is maybe a philosophical comment that I'm going to make. But sometimes when the government comes up with a solution, it's outdated pretty quickly. But we're stuck maybe with that solution for quite a long time because it's kind of a big investment. So what are some reasonable solutions mm-hmm. and where do we go from here?
Well, I think reasonable solutions is when you're, number one, working with your utilities. So as you're building utilities, roads, water, sewer, stormwater, look for those opportunities where you can run the conduit that would allow for broadband to be pulled through your area, cheaper and more efficient for those broadband providers.
Okay, so one option is running conduit whenever you're running utilities and some of these things.
That's right.
Okay,
and so that will allow access. Again, most of the infrastructure happens within a city or town. So, you know, we've got to try and work with some of those rural utilities. That's why we were really pulling on the rural electrics. So that's sort of the dig once approach. So where you're not spending money, mobilizing, demobilizing, and doing all that, making it a little bit more efficient. We've got to dig into what's available in the federal and state legislatures. And then we're really pushing an effort to educate them on the programs that they're creating don't necessarily hit at the problem for rural areas. You know, as we discussed when we talked about what providers are allowed to report, as well as the speeds that they're make for eligibility purposes. So having that at a lower speed than the 25.3.
And you're saying that the 10.1 is maybe something that was passed recently in the state, and it's just, it's 15 years old. I mean, 10.1 is slow.
Yes. But, you know, when you look at it from the federal government standpoint, there are areas of the United States that have no access, absolutely none, not even the 10.1. And so when you look at what, you know, they'll just tell you that they have a ton of people already applying for this, but it's, you know, you're not getting the most economic value for the money that's being spent that way. Mm-hmm. So we've got to look for that economic piece to prove that there's value for doing that improvement. I think trying to just make sure, I mean, a big thing that we do, even with the water and sewer, is making sure our communities are ready for opportunity as they approach. And that's the big thing here, is how do we get all of our areas covered so that when opportunity approaches, or that opportunity may already be sitting there, is able to run with their business, and nothing is inhibiting them from moving forward, removing those barriers. And I think it's going to come from an approach that we haven't developed yet, and it's going to take a team in order to make it work. So that's why right now what we're doing is we're educating first.
Right. You've identified the problem with the study.
We're trying to educate the different officials that need to be educated, and now we're starting to pull people together that can have an impact on it.
So approach the problem.
Next week I've got a meeting with the local economic development organizations in my region. We're going to discuss the problem and then see what our next steps are. One of the things that I think is going to be an inevitability is talking to elected officials about putting money into broadband and helping do a public-private partnership. I think these efforts really should help move the project forward, or move broadband forward in this region, but it will be a really difficult thing to do until it's actually done.
I understand.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like you've attacked the problem the right way, and you're getting people together, and you're mm-hmm. approaching it the right way. If people care about this and they want high speed internet, and they live in an area that's currently that they don't have it, what do they need to do? I mean, reach out to their elected officials, tell them that they're interested in getting this.
Reach out to the elected officials. I mean, one is to just call up your local providers and tell them you're interested, mm-hmm. and then maybe there would be enough people coming together that they would consider running a line out to your area. But elected officials is a good source. Talk to your local economic development organizations. And if you're a business, definitely make that call and tell your elected officials how your business is being hampered by not having broadband.
Excellent. Well, I really appreciate it, Greg. This is very good. And, we hope we can get moving on the issue of rural broadband in our areas.
Right.
Thanks for coming in.
Appreciate the time. Thank you.
Focus on the Community is sponsored by First Federal Savings Bank in Washington and Ligoti. You can listen to a rebroadcast of today's show Sunday mornings at 8:30 a.m. on 4-Star Country, the General 95.9 FM, 1580 a.m. You can also listen to a copy of today's program and past shows by visiting WAMWAMFM.com. I'm Grant Swartzentruber, inviting you to tune in every Saturday morning at 8:35 a.m. on Memories 107.9 WAMW and each Sunday morning on 95.9 and 1580 WAMW as we focus on the community.